into the kitchen. I turned on the radio. What did I hear?
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to 93.3 FM, The Fox, St. Evex's student radio station. You're now listening to Social Justice Radio, which is a weekly program put on by the St. Evex Development Studies Student Society. For the seasoned listeners of our show, you'll know that we transitioned the style of the show from doing a call-and-response partnership with Radio Ada in Ada, Ghana, to taking a more local spin on things going on in our own community. So tonight we have the pleasure of doing one of our call and response shows, which means a portion of the show will be discussing an issue related in Ada, and then we'll be bringing it back home and talking about how that plays out on the ground in Antigonish. So I'm going to open the show by challenging you to just think for a minute about how many languages you can think of off the top of your head. I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about that. So, how many could you think of? Well, just a little fact. The Cambridge Encyclopedia of Language says that the estimated number of total languages in the world varies between 3,000 and 10,000, which is a pretty large gap, if you ask me, which is pretty amazing to think about all that linguistic diversity. So tonight's show is all about language and culture, and the importance of language in keeping culture alive. Culture, as we know, is a human right, and the right of someone to identify with a culture. So therefore, the language that's inherent in a culture goes along in passing down stories, traditions, recipes, and songs. So just to start getting you thinking about this, I'm going to play a clip from a Canadian anthropologist, Wade Davis, a linguistic anthropologist. Now, one of his ideas about language is that it's like an old-growth forest of the mind. So let's see what he has to say.
The ethnosphere has been the sum total of all thoughts and dreams, ideas and myths, intuitions and inspirations brought into being by the human imagination since the dawn of consciousness. The ethnosphere, if you will, is humanity's great legacy. It's a symbol of all that we've achieved and all that we can achieve as a wildly creative and imaginative species. And just as the biosphere is severely under threat with the erosion of habitat and the concomitant loss of plant and animal life, so too is the ethnosphere, but if anything, at a far greater rate. And the great indicator of this, of course, is language loss. When each of you were born, there were roughly 7,000 languages spoken on Earth. Now, a language isn't just a body of vocabulary or a set of grammatical rules. A language is a flash of the human spirit. It's a vehicle through which the soul of each particular culture comes in the material world. Every language is an old-growth forest of the mind, a watershed of thought, an ecosystem of social and spiritual possibilities. And of those 7,000 languages spoken the day that you were born, today fully half are not being whispered into the ears of infants, which means effectively they're on the road to extinction. Now, there are many people who say, well, wait a minute, wouldn't the world be a better place if we all spoke one language? Wouldn't communication be facilitated? Wouldn't it be easier for us to get along? My answer to that is always to say, what a great idea. But let's make that universal language not English, but Inuktitut, or Yoruba, or Haida. And suddenly you begin to feel, as a native speaker of English, what it would be like to be enveloped in silence, to have no means or ability to anticipate the promise of your descendants, or to reflect upon the achievements of your ancestors. And yet that dreadful plight is indeed the fate of somebody somewhere on Earth roughly every fortnight, because on average every 2 weeks some elder passes away and carries with them into the grave the last syllables of an ancient tongue. Now this implies that within a generation we are literally losing half of humanity's intellectual, social, and spiritual legacy. And this doesn't have to happen.
So once again, that was Canadian linguistic anthropologist Wade Davis talking about language and culture. And what a thought-provoking way to think about language and to think about the ethnosphere, as he said. So I hope that got you thinking about language and culture in a little bit of a different way. And now I'm going to bring things over to our portion of the show where we hear a little bit from our partner station in Ada. So a little bit of background information about language in Ghana, because this is really important in knowing a little bit about the context in which we'll be speaking tonight. So the official language of Ghana is English, although there are nine languages that have status of governance, sponsored by government or acknowledged, but there are several other dialects spoken around the country, and a lot of these are regionally located. And the language we'll be focusing on tonight is Dangbe. And there are about 600,000 or 700,000 people who speak Dangbe. And because language is so linked to regional groups, that's why community radio is so important. And Radio Ada doing all of their broadcasting in Dangbe is such an important community resource for the people of Ada. So who we're going to be hearing from tonight is Jemima Lawe, and she is a Dangbe elementary school teacher in Ada. She's going to talk a little bit about the importance of language and oral histories, and how language are so important in keeping oral histories alive. So here we go.
Okay, I'm Jemima Lawe. The importance of oral histories in our culture. The very first thing it does is it allows new generations to know more about their origin. So, talking of origin, where they come from, where they hail from actually before, maybe if there are some relocations and all that, you get to know where your ancestors settled at and where. So in terms of Ada, for instance, legendary tells us that the whole thing is from, the very short one is from Nigeria, Ile Ife, and then the very long one is from Israel. So, you know, getting to hear more of these stories, you get to know more about your people and you understand the way the cultural practices go. You understand why things are the way they are.
Great. And how are they passed down? Is it through teachings or through storytelling with family members? How do younger generations get to hear of these stories and oral histories?
Well, it's through storytelling. Me, for instance, I grew up learning most of these things through storytelling. But currently, some of these practices are dying off because of the love for technology and all that. There's television, and so children are glued to their cartoons and they are glued to their TV games and all manner of things. So they don't really sit with their elderly ones to tell them stories about some of these things. And if they happen to meet it in a book, then they'll learn from it. But if not, you can imagine what will be happening. Yeah, but it is through storytelling most of the times.
And what do you see as some of the dangers or consequences to perhaps not having those stories passed down and kids more focused on technology than on listening to the elders, like you were just saying?
Oh, it's just one thing. People will lose their sense of belonging. Because if you don't know your actual origin, you don't understand anything that goes on around you, and that will lead you to finally neglecting your customs and your traditional way of doing things. That is what it will land you into. Because there are some homes, for instance, that do not, you know, when you talk of culture, you talk of language as well, and there are some homes that do not even speak their local language with their children. They speak English or someone's language or something. And all these things are gradually getting the new generation out of the cultural context. They are losing that part of culture. But, you know, it's just a matter of time and then some level of education that will get people to understand what they should be doing and stop some of the things they are doing.
Could you maybe elaborate more on that connection you just made between language and culture?
Okay, the connection between language and culture is it's just one simple but very tight connection. The language of a people tells who they really are, because just like you see the skin, the color of someone's skin, and you know that person is an African or a white person or whatever, anyhow you want it to be, you could describe the person by that. That same way, the language someone speaks. You know, in Ghana, for instance, we have three main language differences. Ada, for instance, we speak Dangme, and it's a Gwan language. And this Gwan language, you have several languages, both in the southern part of Ghana and then in the northern part of Ghana, under that umbrella of language. You understand? So if you speak your language, it's someone who listens to it, knows where you come from, and automatically the person feels they can even kind of trace even your origin and everything. The language you speak helps someone to trace your origin, and it all boils down to your culture. It all boils down to your traditional practices. So that's how it is. The language is there. Like, if I speak, Dangme is a big language spoken by 7 other geographical located communities. You understand? All these 7 have some variations in the language. Just like English, your Canadian English is different from American English, a bit different from British English as well. And they have the variations. So the same thing here. We have dialectal differences. And when you speak, I can tell if the person is from this land or that land or the other land. I can tell the variations in the 7 when people speak. So it's the same thing. People can just tell where your actual origin is from just the language you speak. That is how beautiful culture is.
I was just wondering if you could explain maybe what you think needs to be implemented or needs to happen in order to spark the interest for the younger generation who's so screen savvy to be re-engaged or reinvested in their language and their culture and the oral histories and traditions that are so important to the Dangme people.
A thing like a scholarship scheme for school children of a particular level, gaining some kind of expertise in something about the culture of those people or about the language itself. It's something that could really attract so many people to get involved with the culture. Or they develop, like someone did recently, the person was able to develop a Dangme Scrabble.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Someone developed a Dangme Scrabble. And I saw that and I was like, wow. And you know, very, very little things. And this guy who developed that thing, well, I don't know if, I'm not sure he's being sponsored, but he got admission into the university and is studying Dangme currently. And you know, for me, I think a person like that should be picked straight away and then sponsored in a way, even if the community can't give him a full scholarship to university education. Something should be catered for to at least make him feel that, oh, these efforts of yours have been recognized by the community. Because that thing will go a long way to help many people in the community. That is it. If schemes of that sort is organized, it is fine. Like we have a traditional festival, Asafotufiam Festival. If it would be possible, they could also organize beauty pageants. They come to only display the indigenous Dangme culture. The indigenous Dangme culture. And I believe if things of this sort is organized and they have some beautiful or some great presents for these people, like whoever the first runner up will be will get this, whoever the winner will be will get that, and very, very, very attracting prizes are put in place. I believe people work very hard to get that. And, you know, it's all about planning, it's all about getting the sponsorship for those things, and it's all about people feeling that, hey, I'm responsible to get this thing done. That if the leaders don't do that and people don't take the responsibilities themselves to, it wouldn't work.
Great. So maybe just before we end, I was wondering if maybe you could share one of your favorite stories or oral histories or traditions that you heard growing up.
Oh, my favorite oral traditional stories. I've gotten one. It's about how the ancestors, you know, as part of the traditional history of the Adans, they migrated from several settlements before they finally settled in Ada. And the very last war they fought before they finally settled in Ada, and that which resulted in this Asafotufiam Festival. The story is told about some Akans following them. They were, you know, they were on the battlefield with those people. And they followed them to somewhere where there's a stream. It's not a big stream, very small. But I learned it used to be that deep. And the Akans come from a forest area. They don't have water bodies there that much. The only water bodies that are around those places are just shallow streams. So apart from the shallow streams, they have I think it's just the shallow streams they have there. So they didn't know the water was that deep. Where they were crossing was that deep. It's one of the tributaries of the Volta River. So what happened was that they went to the Adans at the time, went running, and then they swam the river, the tributary of the river, and then got to the other side of the land. And the Akans, when they were coming, didn't know the thing was that deep. But the Adans were familiar with water because they have the sea and then they have the River Volta too around. So that was just an arm of the River Volta in that area. So they swam easily and then passed, went to the other side of the land. But these Akans who were coming didn't know the river was that deep, and then they just fall in and they go sinking, and then they just drink the water and they get drowned. They didn't know anything about swimming at that time. I'm always happy that thing happened, and the Adans were able to gain their freedom by that. Like that, the water really helped them. And at the time, if you see the water, it's a very small stream. It's very small, very, very small. Something like just some 4 or so meters wide, and it was able to, you know, swallow up all these people. It is interesting.
So welcome back to Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM as CFXU The Fox. So what you just heard was an interview with Jemima Lawe, who is a Dangme Elementary School teacher in Ada in Ghana. So what was so interesting to hear about that was how the language, like the Dangme language, was used to tell stories, to tell the history of the people of Ada. And you know, without having those stories being told in Dangme, it just wouldn't have the same essence for the people. And I thought it was so nice. Thank you so much, Jemima, if you're listening, for sharing that story with us. So that idea of having language and culture linked to history is so important. And so what I'm going to play for you next is Auntie Akbetiu, who's also from Ada, and she's going to sing a song in Dangbe about the relationship between the people of Ada and the Okor Forest, which is a sacred forest in Ada that relates back to the history of the Adas coming there and how they lived in harmony with this forest. So the song will be in Dangbe, and at the end there will be a small translation so you can take away a little bit of the significance from it.
Okay. Nimeliome nimeliba. We way yom can billiome abba. Waba sese wa golu pohi. Nimlifuta mekio. Nene ji dangbe uko niche o. Neba ya tunge uko hionya. Mango mikpitiko ne mango wuno ha nekeji. Logbini ya jepo ji. Dede uko rongbe ole diwo diwo. Diwo li che uko rongbe ole. Ah, dede uko rongbe ole. Ifo li che. Wagba wugwe. Ifo li che.
This one is just something light about the dummy.
Okay.
And this is a traditional, real traditional song. And whenever you enter into the forest, this is the only song they usually sing, especially the Adibiawe clan. Mm-hmm. It's a traditional song.
Ola chonga pako no kekri kri.
For the Adans. So we just want to give you the gist. So the day you go there, is that as you give you the.
Okay.
So thank you, Auntie Yekbetio, for that. And as you heard, that was a song that the Adas would sing before entering into the Okor Forest. So having that song be in Dangbe was inherent to their identity and their relationship with the forest. So what's amazing about this woman that you just heard, Auntie Akbetiu, not only could she sing these traditional cultural songs that were amazing and held so much value to the people who were listening to them, but she was also often very inspired to write songs and to sing them for the people around her about justice for access to natural resources in the area. The Songor Lagoon is one great example of this. There's been a social movement going on in Ada over the last almost nearly 20 years to try to maintain communal access to this resource. And Auntie Akbetiu was a salt miner. And when she sings her songs about how she's seeking justice for the people to have access to the Songor, and it's only in her singing these songs in Dangbe that the people who are involved in the movement can truly understand what she's talking about. And I think the undertones of singing it in her own language and getting to share it with people so that they really understand where she's coming from. So next, we're going to move into an interview with Isaac Jablate. And he happens to be the station coordinator of Radio Ada currently. But on top of that, he's also a proverb and storyteller extraordinaire, as you will soon be introduced to. So he's going to share some local proverbs with us and in that, the importance of learning cultural values through storytelling and through proverbs. So here you go. Here's Isaac Jablate.
Yes, I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about storytelling and oral history and the role that they play in the Dangbe culture here in Ada.
Thank you very, very, very much. You know, first let me say that they play so many roles because most of our histories, legends, myths are not written. Many of the things that you find are not documented within our culture. And therefore, it's a point of reference. It's a point of reference to many people, many listeners. Now, it also heightens the meaning because the Dangbe is descriptive. There are certain terms, there are certain jargons that you have in English. But if you want to bring it into Dangbe, you need to describe. And therefore, you by the description, to make it clearer for people to understand, then you need to narrate a story. Now, if you narrate a story, the narrative way of doing it will make you hold your listeners. It will be very, very captivating. So your listeners always, you hook your listeners and they are ready to listen to you instead of the straight things. It also illustrates. There was a big white board. I'm just making an illustration. A big white board. And there was a dotted black dot in the middle of it. And people were asked, what do you see on the board? And everybody said, a black spot. So what about the big white? So you didn't see anything white, and you can use this to reflect on how people see their fellow human beings. They are able to look at the bad side of man easily. So if I'm telling a story like this, they'll say, well, for the whole white thing, it's only the dot that you can see. What about the big one? We always look at the negative side of man. So it will be clearer. It will be clearer. Let me probably cite another example for you, I guess, about there was an apathy.
An apathy?
Yes, lukewarm attitude on the part of community members. Nobody was ready to do anything. And the chief wanted to award the most hard-working or committed person in society. So one day, a big tree fell in the path to the farm. This chief, in the night, midnight, went there and hid a bar of gold, hid it under. People were jumping. They didn't want to remove it, so they kept on jumping over it, until it got to a tent of a poor man. The man got there, looked at the log in the path, relaxed his chin in the palm, and then bent down and lifted. When he lifted it, he saw gold under it. This one illustrates how we should be ready to serve our community and we'll be rewarded more abundantly.
Mm-hmm.
This is an illustration. So what I want to say is that because these things are not written, when you write, when you are speaking, as part of the public speaking in Ghana, you give these narratives. These narrations will go a long way to make people understand it better.
And how are these stories and these histories, how are they passed on?
It's passed on from generation to generation. There are many stories some time ago, whenever we were going to farm, and we would have to walk for long, long, long journeys. And my father would just be narrating so that the journey could be shorter for us. You know, it is said, paradoxically, that when lovers walk, the longest journey is the shortest. You see, so as we are discussing, we are laughing, we are playing, we'll get on. So I learned, it's passed on from generation to generation. But today, let me tell you, I hold a view that it should be written. Because, yes, it should be written. Because these things are now, it's a tool that will make people understand you better. It's a tool that people will make you will make people understand certain things simpler. And in a very relaxed way. And then by so doing, the language is also embellished. Yes.
Yes.
Polish the language, it's embellished. But, oh, I see. Look at how you have said this thing.
So do you think there are some stories and some histories in Dangbe that are not in Chui or are not in Fanti? Are there some that are only stories for Dangbe?
I can say yes. At the same time, allow me to say no. I have learned others from other areas in Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, and other places. I have learned. I keep on learning them, but I do adaptation. For instance, I got a proverb in Kasena in the north, which was talking about the baba tree. And here we do not have the baba tree, so I use the neem tree.
So the stories are adapted to suit the local
culture. Yeah, so that people understand. If I say Wabab in the southern part of Ghana, yeah, people say, what is Wabab?
Mm.
But if I say the neem tree, the proverb is that when the lizard hides behind the Wabab tree,
mm.
both are targets. But when I bring it to the Dango one, I'll say that when the lizard hides behind the neem tree, both are targets. You see, it's suiting the local environment.
Mm.
If, for instance, there is a proverb on this in the guinea fowl, and the guinea fowl are not common in the south here,
mm.
so you have a story on this thing. Then I have also taken the pains to know proverbs concerning most of the animals I know.
Can you tell me one? A local animal. Do you know any proverbs about the goats?
Yes, I know so many.
Can you please tell me one?
The goat says, anywhere it is beaten, it means there is something precious there. It's very, very precious. So when you are beaten, prevent it from going to somewhere, it means that you have something better there. So continuously to go there. You see, why are you preventing me from going there? The goat again says that if you are brought up by a poor man, you will never develop the home, because quickly they will take you to the market for sale. The goat is saying that even if you give it a calico,
mm.
to chew,
mm-hmm.
the feces will still be black. So it means never, no matter what you do. And there are some human beings like that. You feed it calico, paint, white paint, the feces will be black no matter what you do.
And what's the meaning of this one?
No, there are some people, no matter what you do to please them, you cannot please them, no matter what you do. Somebody will hate you, you don't know what you have done, and you will try to find out, what have I done? You give this like a woman who is out, or a man who is out of love. Giving biscuits, giving presents will not please him. Do you understand?
I understand. Yes.
So no matter what you do.
Yes. And
he's talking about contentment, to be content.
And does Radio Ada broadcast some of these local stories and these local proverbs in Dangbe for people of Ada to understand?
That is the weapon I always hold. If I sit behind the console and you get to the communities and they know. I don't speak with pride, but if they know that I am coming on board, people have their pens, people are recording, people are doing a number of things just to make sure it is recorded. So I can say some, I'll handle any foolish program, but provided they know that within a minute there will be a proverb, there will be this, and I can even go into folklore music. I can even pause and sing,
mm.
and then, you see, so people are always listening, and
mm.
that is why people always want to listen to the radio, because that is the rich language they want to hear.
Mm.
Mm. Yes.
So you said that you feel that these stories should be written down.
I think that I hold that opinion, that it should be written down.
What are some of the dangers of losing local knowledge
mm-hmm.
with the rise of English speaking and education?
The story is sad. People think that the moment you speak English, you are the best person on earth. That is what the view that many people say. You speak English and you don't understand your own language, you cannot speak. That means you are. But today I say that let us think first in our own language. I don't know if you know the history of Japan. It got to a point that they decided to put all books aside, and they wrote everything in their own language. All the schools were learning their own languages, and they did it. Now it's gone far. It was a developing country just like Ghana and all this. So they started to revolutionize even their own language. It's a long history, and I don't use it. So it means that it must start from somewhere.
Mm.
It must start from somewhere. That is why if ours is also written, and to find on the market a Dangwe book, collection of legends, collection of myths, our stories in a book like this. And at times too, I wake up, I sit down to create, to suit my listeners.
Mm.
For instance, there was a time I looked at a tree. And when I looked at the tree, the leaves were singing, the leaves were dancing. The stem was so stiff. And the most supported area, the root, will never make a noise. It's talking about humility. It's talking about humility. It's so buried, you won't even see it. It's holding the tree very, very, very firm. But it does not make noise. It supports everything.
Mm.
So I looked at the tree like that. And then I looked at the tree and I can talk about the fruit. You see? So that is the way I look. At times I don't look at anybody. I don't expect it from anywhere. But I try to create it. Mm-hmm. And I will use it to see the. It should have contextual meaning. The context is very important. To see so that you are talking and people will know that yes, what you are saying, there is relation.
Mm.
It's not that apart, so that the people will make people be thinking too far, but it is just close. For instance, say the snake. The snake can peel his skin. The snake can peel his skin 100 times in a year, but its way of biting remains the same. Will it change this thing? Because it will remain the same. You have one about a crocodile. Until you've crossed the river, never insult a crocodile. You are barking on the crocodile and you are crossing the river. Then you say, crocodile, look at your mouth. Your skin is not that good. Wait until you cross the river.
do you have any stories or proverbs about the significance of proverbs and oral histories in Dangbe?
Yes, we have them. There are many.
And please, maybe you could share one with us to close the program.
The significance. You're talking about the significance. Mm. You see, we have proverbs of our proverb of morality to tell how. For instance, let me use the bamboo. You might have. Have you ever seen the bamboo?
I've seen the bamboo.
The bamboo is very, very tall. But anywhere you find the bamboo, it is always burning like this. So even though I am the tallest, I must bow before the young ones, the young trees, so that if I'm falling one day, I may fall on their branches, I don't fall down. So anytime the bamboo is falling, it falls on the short ones. They are always ready to support. It's talking about leadership and how humble you should be. You should not claim that, okay, I'm a coordinator. Hey, when you are falling, they'll laugh at you. Be okay with them, come to their level. Eat with them, drink with them, play with them. Tell them stories, what you know. So you see the bamboo. It's a proverb of morality, how to be very, very sober.
So welcome back to Social Justice Radio. And what you just heard was an interview with Isaac Jablate, who's the station coordinator and a storytelling extraordinaire, as I'm sure you just heard, from Radio Ada in Ghana. So I think he kind of left us with a really interesting question, which is kind of the idea of whether or not these stories and these proverbs that have historically been handed down orally in the local language from generation to generation, should those stories be written down, and what role does writing them down play in cultural preservation? Which is just something interesting to think about. So we just heard a little bit about the importance of language and Dangbe in culture in Ada. So I'm now going to turn things over to Rudy Graham, who's here in the studio with us. Hi, Rudy.
Hello, Rachel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm very well. Excellent day, so can't complain.
Yeah, I agree. It's been beautiful. And so Graham, you are Rudy. I apologize. So you're a native Scottish Gaelic speaker from the Isle of Skye and an international student here at X. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about yourself.
All right, so I came over just about the middle of September. I'm a 24-year-old male Scottish student. I study Scottish Gaelic and development. And for those, I just want to clear something up before we just go into the program, because a lot of people over here are used to hearing Gaelic, that pronunciation in terms. And it is Gaelic, as people refer to it over here, but back home it's Gaelic. So that's what I'll be using. And just as so there's no...
Gaelic.
Gaelic, yes, yes.
As in garlic without the R.
Yes.
Gaelic.
Yes, Gaelic.
Thank you.
So basically, I study that and development back at a university called SalMar Ostig, which is the only university of its kind in the world that offers degree courses through the medium of Gaelic from start to finish, and yeah, you can do everything. So basically, yeah, as you said, I grew up in the Isle of Skye. My mother's a Gaelic singing teacher. I kind of had a mixture of Gaelic and English growing up, but I was certainly more proficient at Gaelic than I was at English before I went to school. But, you know, the world makes sure that changes. So basically I'm over at St. Effects. It's a very interesting place, really enjoying it. So, yeah, it's good.
Great. So you said your mom was a Gaelic singing teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's fabulous. So I feel like you were exposed at a really young age, and your first language was Gaelic, which is obviously not the language that you're speaking here. So, and the fact that you're studying your language and the history of your language, that's great. So maybe you could speak a little bit to why do you think it's important to retain minority languages in a globalized world?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you asked that question, really, because it's quite a good one. And it's understandable, I think, to most people to ponder that. You know, because it's very easy to subscribe to a one-size-fits-all philosophy in terms of language in the world, where you think, well, you know, it's far easier for people to communicate globally if they use a lingua franca or a global language. And maybe we can do away with all this other kind of minority stuff. But like the most interesting subjects that you kind of study, you kind of learn to learn that it's a wee bit more nuanced and it goes a wee bit deeper than these seemingly pragmatic standpoints that a lot of people have. I mean, why is it important? I mean, yeah, I could talk all day about this, but there is a certain amount of points. I was listening to the Wade Davis clip that you just played, and he touched upon a lot of things which I really agree with. There's another guy called David K. Harrison, which is one of my favorite kind of linguists, and he talks about language as a collective structure of genius, basically, which has evolved through years. It has picked up so much in terms of identity, cultural distinction, all this kind of stuff. And he kind of puts the argument forward that if you could imagine yourself as an Egyptian looking at this, at the pyramid, right, and you've got a whole host of people coming in with pickaxes and starting to pick away at your cultural symbol, which is the pyramid, which is, you know, that it's basically the same thing. It's a collective structure of genius. The only thing is that language is intangible, and people can't see it, so they don't understand the rights that go with that. If people started picking apart the pyramids, the whole world would be up in arms. But it's more difficult to see that with language, I think.
Yeah, and what a great analogy. I've never thought of it like that, but really the only difference is the tangible and the intangible, but both are inherently linked in the identity of those people.
Yes.
Which is fascinating. So what role do you think that identity, we're talking about identity of people, what role does identity play in galvanizing the Gaelic community?
Yeah, well, I think that it plays a huge role. I mean, what are people without language? It's the single most important marker of identity that you could really think of. And as well, the interesting thing is that it's so inherent and it's so obviously a marker of identity that people tend to gloss over it and don't really think about it that much. But I mean, as I speak English and Gaelic, if I can put it like this, and I love English. It's a great language. It's very handy. I like reading and all that kind of stuff. But it's practical for me, and it doesn't mean anything to me. It's just a mode of transmitting ideas and talking to people. But see, the thing is, you take that kind of identity, if you are maybe a monoglot speaker with an English or other dominant language, and you intensify that and you multiply it by 100,000 times, and maybe that's kind of what it feels like to be a speaker of minority language culture, because you are under threat, and if you're under threat, you tend to try and band together as a collective, and that's where identity comes in, as a common force bringing people together and galvanizing, as you said, the community. So it's a huge thing. It can galvanize communities. It can bring people together, strengthen their own roots, and it can also afford people ambition to try and change things for the better.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I'm going to ask a a bit of a two-part question. I know we're going to get to hear some actual Gaelic singing and a story in Gaelic. So maybe you could just first speak to, or you know, touch on oral traditions, whether, you know, what importance they have in Gaelic culture, and then maybe you could introduce the song and story we're going to listen to.
Yeah, well, it's had a huge importance in the Gaelic culture, and I'm sure as many other minority cultures all over the world as well. I mean, it's just like art and classical music, how everybody knows that they've kind of like reflected economic and social and political signs of the times, and generally in song and storytelling, you would get the community feel, but you would also get, like, in songs written by Mary Vorden Oren, who is a prolific songwriter of Skye, you kind of get these themes of social political oppression coming through, and like a mirror of all that. So, but I mean, generally, in the most the biggest thing in Gaelic culture is what you would call the ceilidh. And Kaylee, I think what David talks about on this wee clip that I'll play as well, is just like a meeting place for Gaels, that's Gaelic speakers, to come together, commonly around people's houses, sing songs, tell stories, and all this kind of stuff. And I thought it was really nice to come to Nova Scotia and meet some of the Gaels that went across the seas, 100 or 200 years ago. So I'm going to play a wee clip of that now.
Great,
if
yeah.
That's all right.
So we're going to a ceilidh.
Yeah, we're going to a ceilidh.
Right here on 93.3 FM, The Fox.
What does the word y'all know what the word means?
Kitchen party. Visit.
Visit.
Not
yeah,
visit.
You got it.
Visit.
You got it.
Visit.
It's a visit. It's just a visit.
But
it's
just a visit. Kitchen party. Oh,
it just means a visit. But, you know, people associate it with different things. And when in Gaelic culture, if somebody was to visit somebody, sometimes it would be music, sometimes it wouldn't be music, sometimes it would be stories or songs and stuff like that. So I might sing you a song first, and then I might tell you a story. But No. I'm going to sing you a Gaelic song. It kind of fits the thing. And I want you guys to learn the chorus, okay? Alright? It's very straightforward, alright? So it goes like this. A Malena.
A Malena.
O Malena.
O Malena.
She Malena.
She Malena.
A Fedu.
A Fedu.
A Malena.
A Malena.
O Malena.
O Malena.
So that's the whole chorus, right? So say this after me. It just means, hey, my love, oh, my love.
Okay.
My love is the new guy, new man.
Okay.
Hey, my love, oh, my love. Hey, Malanin, oh, Malanin.
Hey, Malanin, oh, Malanin.
Shay, Malanin, a fedu.
Shay, Malanin, a fedu.
Hey, Malanin, oh, Malanin.
Hey, Malanin, oh, Malanin.
Great. Okay. So you got the idea. And it goes like this, and I'll sing the lines, and you repeat them after me. Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
Shay, Malanan, a fedood.
Shay, Malanan, a fedood.
Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
All right, so the whole chorus together is like this, and repeat it after me when I sing it the first time, you go after. Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan, she, Malanan, na ferud. Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan, she, Malanan, na ferud. Hey, Malanan, oh, Malanan.
So, this is what's called a milling song, and in Gaelic tradition, milling is the tradition you do where you're beating a cloth and you're trying to bring the cloth that's just fresh off the loom together because the weed is pretty loose. So you're beating it against the table to tighten it up, and usually songs would accompany the work, and this is one of those songs. And I heard a version of this song. This song has been sung many times by many people in a different version, but this one We'll see you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hey,
Malay.
But I heard a recording of my great granduncle singing this song, and this is the way he had it. So that's why I'm saying it. So. So what happens is everybody's singing, they're beating the cloth, and the main, like the guy who's leading the song, sings the verses, and everybody joins in the chorus. All right, so it's pretty straightforward. All right, so all right, I'll start. We'll go 1, 2, 3.
Hey, Malanan, oh Malanan, she Malanan, Yaferud. Hey, Malanan, oh Malanan. Jerik mische mach se wat in breine hange gaf mi nu. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen, nach Eru. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Jerik mische mach se wat in breine hange gaf mi nu. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen, nach Eru. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Shemalanen machen da jer jenig dressen as en ur. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, Shemalanen nach en ur. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, Shemalanen machen da jer jenig dressen as en ur. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, Shemalanen nach en ur. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Kuier na braken arte tuchin a salchin shinyu. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen na feru. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Kuier na braken arte tuchin a salchin shinyu. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen na feru. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Bielanen, ikarmanen, biosakam, zeke, you. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen, afedrud. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. Bielanen, ikarmanen, biosakam, zeke, you. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen, she Malanen, afedrud. Hey, Malanen, oh Malanen. She Malanen, afedrud.
That's the Gaelic song for you.
What was the rest of the song?
So the rest of the song is from the perspective of a woman, from what I've seen in the Gaelic songs that I've seen, if it's written by a woman, it's probably an older song in the case of Nova Scotia, that is. It just didn't happen so much over here. That the women were making songs.
They were busy.
They were busy, taking care of the kids, you know, all kinds of things. Not that they weren't busy before, but. but. So it's an older song, and it's written from a woman's perspective. And the whole thing is just describing what her love is like. And so the first verse was. My love is. Wait, no. I woke up this morning. Yeah, the first one was. At the head of the river. And I went there. And then she says, my love is the son of the tailor. And he will make me a dress in the new fashion. And. It's stuff like that, like you're describing.
Okay. Yeah. Mm.
Piu va na nagunya vok, va bok.
And anyway, this old man was very poor.
I guess piu vigatol voaska ache va hikatai. I guess ersan pi I guess kuchna hikai.
Okay, so this guy, he would go from house to house for some food, and what's Kuchinahiki?
Night's lodgings.
Ah, night's lodgings.
agus kiu trippin' and trippin' about all the rannikig tea and tapperst.
So this trip, he, like many Gaelic stories, arrived at the priest's house.
Agus kiu rannikig tea is hora lane so the doctor from machines hora beer is coaching hug.
So he went in and he got a t-shirt and some clothes, some food and lodgings. Was he naked? he wasn't well off.
I guess Hook an Eric a row, three no cave pale, you're not broken, I can suckers.
So anyway, he noticed that this priest had three or four pairs of shoes.
I guess, a pair in a brock.
So he decided that he would steal one of the pairs of shoes.
I guess, a pair in a brock, and I guess, go with a wash in.
So anyway, he stole this pair of shoes and off he went.
I guess can you vashina kurdish va farakin karin haro farakin magni inche.
So as time passed, I suppose he felt a wee bit guilty about this.
I guess chayak oeistroch.
Gotcha.
Oeistroch. Confession.
So he went to confession.
I guess Shane and Sackers the man.
And it was the same very same priest that was on the other side.
I guess horse and tacker and sackers. Oh gee, I know.
So the priest said, well what did you do?
Horse that rhyme rut almost.
He said, I've done an awful thing.
I guess horse that got me pair brock.
He said, I've stolen a pair of shoes.
I guess horse and tackers. Oh, she wrote almost a hash in.
And the priest goes, well, that's terrible. That's awful.
I guess horse that can you listen to Jane Amy and gash a peanut?
So the old guy goes, I just don't know what to do. Do you want them?
I guess horse that can you fame like a mother? I guess fame to tell what ask in the face in the gutch in the broken.
So the priest goes, no, I've no need for a pair of shoes. The thing that you need to do is you need to go back to the person who you stole them from.
Well, horse that, ain't she me goat, but I am. Hi me at Ashken, don't you? I guess horse me and Gavshapena. I guess horse that Hagaga at teacher.
So he says, well, I did that. I've gone back to the person who I took them off and I offered them to give them back and he said that he didn't want them at all.
Oh, hanyal cars and bees around. Hanyal shin hode corhorst, which is
So the priest says, oh, well, it doesn't matter anyway, you don't need to worry.
I guess, hi, Ashen.
And he went home. With the shoes.
And after the night.
Goodbye, that's the news.
So there you have it, Akeli here at Social Justice Radio on 93.3 FM, The Fox. Thank you so much, Rudy, for that.
You're welcome.
So, wow, we just really took a trip around the world in the last hour, and we got to hear about Dungbe and Ada. We got to hear about Gaelic, not only in Scotland, but also here in Antigonish, and how all these languages are intersecting in what Rudy said so nicely as a globalized world. So I hope that you can leave our show tonight thinking a little bit differently about language, the language that you're speaking and how it says so much more about you than just the words coming out of your mouth, as I think we've heard testaments from Jemima, from Ja, from Akpetio, and from Rudy. here in the studio. So that concludes another week of Social Justice Radio, and I just want to call attention to our program next week, where we'll be talking about local food justice in Antigonish. And as we segue from the week to the weekend, and I know this is Thanksgiving weekend and a lot of people will be going home to celebrate, think about what you're thankful for. And I know personally I'll be really grateful for friends, family, and also for the privilege of getting to live on this beautiful Mi'kmaq land that we all share. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you, Rudy, for joining us. And you'll be hearing from us again next week. Thank you so much. I'm